It was demanding. There's just no question. It was demanding on your family life and your relationship with your kids as they were growing up. Everybody has that problem. They wish they could spend more time at home. Yeah. Jobs are demanding, but not just astronaut jobs, or not just being an astronaut, but every job is demanding. So you have to make those decisions.
And so, in the background, of course, the Apollo program was all about beating the Russians to the moon and amazing speed that we went through this program. Was that pressure there for schedule and meeting schedules through the program? Did you feel pressure from the schedule because of the mandate to meet by the end of the decade?
Well, I felt a lot of pressure every time I was on a crew assignment. I felt pressure. And of course, we understood that the Soviets were coming along nicely with their program. They were not Johnny come latelys. If you go back and check the history books, you look at Konstantin Tsiolkovsky, and he was right up there on a par with Robert Goddard or any of our experts. So the Soviets were to be respected, and we did respect them. But in our day-to-day labors, I at least didn't pay a hell of a lot of attention to them. I knew they were there, we knew they were there, and that they had the possibility of perhaps beating us to the moon. We didn't think so, but we had enough on our plate without worrying about the Russians or the Soviets.
So if I take what happened from Apollo 1 through Apollo 11, the dates are just mind-boggling to me. So the Apollo 1 fire was in January of 1967. Apollo 8 is December of 1968, and the landing on the moon is July of 1969. So that, to me, is a big wow. I mean, to get all that way in that short period of time. And the obvious question for us today, and we're trying to get back to the moon and go on to Mars, is how do we move faster? There were leaders then at NASA, George Lowe and others, that made this happen. Any thoughts about, what are your memories about the leadership at NASA and how they made this happen? Chris Kraft, George Lowe, who were the...
Well, George Lowe was, I don't want to say a youngster, because they were all pretty young in those days, but he was not one of the most senior guys on the planning staff, and yet he was the one who convinced NASA administration to instead of having Apollo 8 be sort of a gussied up of Apollo 7, instead of that, he decided to send Apollo 8 all the way to the moon, which was at the time a very risky and a very gutsy decision. Turned out to be a very good one. It accelerated our pace considerably. But I'm not sure I missed you. I think I missed the thrust of your question.
I'm just wondering how you credit the choices they made in how fast they were able to move. What we see today sometimes is not.
Yeah, I think throughout, Bob Gilruth was the center director in Houston, and he was not an impressive looking guy, but the more you spent time with him, the more impressive he was in his ability to make engineering and personnel judgments. And he, more than any one person, I would say, kind of set the pace. And it was a good pace. We were swift. We were. As I say, I always felt the pressure to get this done, get it done well, but also get it done now, all the way up through the launch of 11.
Yeah, and one other thing, Charlie. I think I was kind of sitting there in a daze at the way that the mission objectives were changed and switched around at relatively the last minute, in order to still beat the Russians to a particular thing. In other words, to get to fly around the moon. I think Apollo 8 originally was not scheduled to go to the moon until they heard that the Russians were very shortly going to launch a lunar orbiter.
Yeah.
So then the mission started shuffling. And these poor guys that were assigned to the missions, you know, they had to pick up a different mission book with rules and everything, and learn different things, learn different trajectories. So that impressed me, was how quickly those decisions were made to change the objectives of missions and shuffle things around at literally the last minute.
Well, yes, Apollo 8 especially. Just to remind, Apollo 8 is the flight that went around the moon but did not land, and then they transmitted back readings from the Bible. They're well remembered for that. I was Capcom on Apollo 8, which was sort of interesting. And here it was, you're about to have people leave Earth orbit to go to hypervelocity. First time in history, people were actually going to leave this little planet and actually fly away from it. Wow. I thought, surely the president will be here, my right side. I saved him a seat at the console. I said, surely the Pope will send a message. I know Frank Sinatra will dedicate a song to this. And instead of that, Frank Borman and I had this wonderful, perhaps a little verbose conversation. You know, with all my dramatic ability, I said, Apollo 8, you go for TLI. But, you know, Borman met me halfway. He said, Roger, Houston. That was it. No, you know, no drama, no nothing.
No drama.
But as I look back on it, Apollo 8 was an extremely important mission. It kind of got out of sequence, as Joe was saying, but extremely important, perhaps in some mind, more important than Apollo 11. The two flights are quite similar, quite different. Apollo 8 was about leaving. Apollo 11 was about arriving. You know, 100 years from now, the historians, I'm sure, will have a brouhaha at the bar about which of those two is more important, the leaving or the arriving. And it's not for me to say, but as time goes by, I hate to be loyal completely to 11, but I think maybe the act of leaving is even a little more important than the act of arriving. But anyway, they're both very good. Yeah. Wow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think the folks would appreciate a little bit of insight into the training. So you had, obviously you had rendezvous and docking training, you had the lunar lander training vehicle for the LEM. Joe, you were back up on 10, right? So what goes into the training as we're getting from 8 to 9 to 10 to 11, some of the unique aspects of how these vehicles flew? By the way, Joe, I heard you rolled the X-15. Is that true?
Maybe.
Maybe? Was it that general that brought you in and tore the thing up?
No. No, there was a good reason for that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it made sense. That's why I'm not at Leavenworth today.
but you didn't roll the OLTV, the lunar lander.
No.
Okay.
No, it was my first flight in the X-15, and it just handled so beautifully. It was a wonderfully flying airplane when you stayed within the envelope. And I was just feeling the airplane out. The first ride was a dollar ride. You only went to half throttle because they didn't want you to be overcome by G's, and they were pretty impressive, but I was rolling back and forth, feeling it out, and it felt just like a fighter, just like a good fighter, and stable as everything in all three axes. And Bob Rushworth called and said, okay, Joe Henry, probably ought to look out the window and get yourself set up for landing, because we didn't have any guidance, navigation, no guidance in the X-15. And I looked out and I saw the dry lake bed come screaming up underneath. And I'd never been anywhere near that high or that fast before. And I saw the lake bed going by me and I thought, I'm going to overshoot that sucker. And it didn't want to push over and get a negative angle of attack, because then the airplane did get squirrely. So I just rolled it up and let the nose fall through and did a sloppy slow roll and got the nose pointed down. and then got the speed brakes out and got back into dense atmosphere. Got it slowed down and in. So I did it intentionally. But I did have to go up the chain of command with that story.
You did, yeah.
I really did. Had to go to Don Sorley, the head of fighter ops at the time. He said, sure. Well, I'd have done the same thing, but you better talk to Tom Collins. And General Collins was the head of flight test at Edwards. So I told him, he said, yeah, I'd have done the same thing, but don't, you're going to have to go see General Branch. So I went to General Branch, the same guy who tore up my application, and called me and said, he made me stand there. He made you sweat, you know. And I walked in and I stood at attention for a long time. He had some papers, and it turns out it was just a local newspaper he was reading, but he'd thumb back and forth, you know, and finally he said, sit down, Engel. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, did you roll it? And I said, yes, sir, I did. And he said, what'd you do that for? I told him, and he said, huh. Well, I'd have done the same damn thing, but you're going to have to go see Paul Bickle down in Nassau.